Henry Lytton Cobbold, who's the custodian of Nebworth House, one of Hertfordshire's most famous estates. To locate it, this is a few miles up the A1 from Welling Garden City, and about level with the southern edge of Stevenage.
We're exactly 30 miles from Marble Arch, yes, up the A1.
You're here because we have been in contact about a competition for primary school children throughout Hertfordshire. Primary schools writing short stories. Now, what I want to try and work out is how on earth you got into a project like that. Here you are running a very busy estate, a big country house with a huge park, deer and everything else that's involved with it. Trying to keep that estate afloat, no doubt. And you go into a competition for primary school children.
Education is very important to us. Our charity actually has education in its title. We are the Nebworth House Education and Preservation Trust. So we have an education officer as part of our team, and we welcome a lot of school children to the house during the year. And what we're trying to put across to them, apart from fitting in with their curriculum of Tudor history and Victorian history, is very much the literary heritage wrapped up in Nebworth House. The Lyttons were long been a literary family, and prior to the 1970s, we were known worldwide as the home of the Victorian novelist Edward Bulwer Lytton, who is now famous today, rather ironically, for this opening line to a novel that he published in 1830 called Poor Clifford. The line has become notorious, and in fact it's sort of become the second most famous opening to a story after Once Upon a Time. And we thought that that was a great lead-in, using this line, "It was a dark and stormy night." A wonderful lead-in for children to pick that up and to let it fire their imaginations and come up with a story. Because I've always encouraged and liked the idea that creative writing should be back in the curriculum. I think actually times are changing, and I think creative writing is now becoming more relevant to our national curriculum. It's about time. I think it's a very important part of learning. And I think this is a terrific way of introducing that element.
And it's more interesting and in a way more specific than starting with Once Upon a Time. If you'd set that other opening phrase, it would have been a bit sort of, oh, here we go again, another children's story.
What I like about It Was a Dark and Stormy Night is that it instantly creates the mystery and intrigue, and gives the story a flavour. And I think that's a helpful start to young writers.
The house itself presumably has been haunted at various stages, and so presumably the author was probably...
It's a very old house. It's a very old house. So if any house in this land is haunted, Nebworth House will be it.
It's about over 500 years old.
The house itself is over 500 years, but then it's on the top of a hill, which it said is the highest point if you draw a very straight line between London and York. The hill that Nebworth House sits on is 200 foot above sea level, and therefore has been a settlement for a very long time, right back beyond Saxon times. So we know that spot is, there's a lot of life has taken place on that hill over the last couple of millennia. We've been there since 1490 as a family.
Well, does that mean that you were on the right side of some royal debate?
Well, funnily enough, we bought it off the in-laws even then. But you're absolutely right. We were on the right side of the Battle of Bosworth. And my ancestor, Robert Lytton, did fight alongside Henry VII and became the keeper of the king's wardrobe. Very important job, making sure that the king's underpants arrived with the king. And in fact, I think there's a big part of the city that's still called Wardrobe, which is dates from that time where the king's wardrobe was an important council position. And Nebworth was, for him, a country retreat within a day's ride from London. And we've been there ever since.
And you obviously therefore stayed on the right side of the various kings. I mean, Henry VIII redistributed quite a lot of property, but you were obviously, again, your family survived.
We got on well with the Tudors. And then, funnily enough, going beyond that, 1600s, we managed to be on both sides of the Civil War. We started off with Cromwell's cousin being married to the family, and then when they didn't have any children, we were inherited by a royal. So we've done well in that respect. We're now, my wife and I are now the 19th generation, and I sort of see it as sort of 25, 30 year tenures that we have between the generations. And I have to say, I think we're over halfway through our tenure. My son is 22, very much hoping that he'll come and take over within the next decade, and then it'll be his turn.
And the author that we spoke about, your great-great-great-grandfather, the author, of course, was a Victorian politician as well as a writer, a novelist, a poet.
He was a Victorian everything, yes. And in fact, it's often said of Bulwer Lytton that if he'd concentrated on any one of those disciplines, he'd be the supreme genius of his day. The fact that he actually embarked on every single one of them meant that in each one he was overtaken. So in poetry, he was overtaken by Tennyson, and novel writing, overtaken by Dickens. But no, he was a remarkable man, and was active in pretty well every corner of Victoria. Victorian life.
And if one visits the house today, are there signs, does one see signs of these earlier generations in? You have various exhibitions on at different times, I know.
It's one of the fun things about Knebworth House, and because it's been in the same family ownership for 500 years, is that no generation has wanted to sort of completely do away with what's gone before. So what it becomes, therefore, is an extraordinary walk through history. You travel from room to room and you see elements of every one of those 19 generations. And so it's a wonderful sort of glimpse into our social history. And you travel through, for instance, a Regency bedroom, or a Victorian library, a Tudor banqueting hall, a Jacobean banqueting hall, rather, or a sort of an armoury with lots of medieval armour. I mean, it's a wonderful sort of glimpse of every single one of those 19 generations.
And this is why it's so attractive to schools to bring groups there to see this.
It's a wonderful resource for schools, yes. And so, we love welcoming schools to Knebworth.
But the house is only part of what you're dealing with here, because I remember the park with the deer, the church surrounded by trees.
You're right. I mean, the church belongs to the Church of England, but there is a park and a small estate to worry about as well. And so, yes, my wife and I run three entities, really. We run the leisure business, which runs the park, and the estate, which is a couple of small farms and some woodland. Both of those entities in themselves are a struggle to keep going. I mean, we sort of run them so that they break, just about manage to break even if the sun shines on us. And then the third entity is the charity. That we're not directly connected to that because we're, but we administer, our company administers the charity, which has responsibility for the house and for the gardens.
Okay, so there are various parts to this organisation. There's the estate, which runs, has to break even, as it were, as you said, and the park, which is an event-based place, and the house, which brings people in. But you mentioned a charity as well. What's the nature of that?
Yes, we're fortunate to have been able to create this charity in the 1980s. The trustees are the heads of all the local councils and some independent financial advisors who work very hard as volunteer trustees to help us preserve this wonderful old house, because the fact is that it's a little bit creaky at the edges.
By which you mean it takes a lot of money to keep it going.
It takes a lot of money to keep it going.
Because it's an old house, it's 500 years old, that itself is...
And ironically, it was actually built as a Tudor brick mansion that the Victorians then wanted to make look like a castle. And so they covered it in this covered the brick in stucco, which held on with iron pins, wanting it to look like an old castle. They didn't want a new castle, they wanted it to look like an old castle when they built it. And of course, the thing about stucco and iron pins is the iron pins gradually dissolve, so there's nothing holding the stucco to the brick. The rain gets behind the stucco and waits until it's rotted the brick, and then it pops the stucco off. So it is a nightmare to keep going. And when my father and mother moved in the 70s, I mean, I remember the banqueting hall was literally a row of buckets because of the rain that used to pour through the ceiling. And thanks to the creation of that charity in the early 80s, things have got a bit better. We've managed over the last 25 years to spend about $5.5 million on the north end of the house. And if you see the house nowadays, you can see very much the difference between the north end and the south end. The north end has been beautifully restored on the outside, and the structure is now sound of the north end of the house. But the very disturbing fact is that the south end of the house is still unrestored, and for that, the current bill is about $9.5 million. $9.5 million that we do not have. So that is the job of that charity, to try and find a way whereby we can raise that $9.5 million to complete the basic restoration of the house, and then to create some form of a fund to let it carry on into the future.
Does most of that money come? I mean, not the $9.5 million, because you're still going to get that, but the $5 million, is that gifts? Is it bequests? Is it lottery funds?
No, we've applied to the National Lottery and been turned down 2 or 3 times, so that's not going to work for us. We sometimes are able to get contributions from English Heritage, and they have been wonderful in helping us in that respect. I mean, we are on their priority heritage at risk list, and they are very concerned about the house. But no, the reality is that we've got to come up with it ourselves. And what we have tried to do in the past is try and fit in with our local development plans. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, there are a couple of small farms associated with the estate. And what one tries to do is, if there is a need for housing in our area, try try and get the local authorities thinking that it would be, and if we need to create housing, if we created it in a place where it would also benefit a heritage house like Nebworth House, then in a sense you're sort of, you know, you may be sacrificing a green field here, but you are putting that into proceeds from that into preserving another part of the heritage. Sure. So that's what we work at. I mean, it's a difficult one and it'll take many years. I just hope that it may not be my generation that solves that problem, but hopefully at some point that will work as a solution and be a solution that we can all be happy with. Because, I mean, apart from my son becoming Paul McCartney, I don't see another one. Although, I mean, that is our job. We are here to try and find ways to try and raise that money to complete that job. And onward we forge.
Is the charity responsible for the events that go on? I mean,
No, it's not. No, the leisure company, our leisure company, which sort of keeps us there and is basically what employs us, is what runs the park and the events that go on.
The park itself has features that are there all the time. I call it the playground area. That will be unfair, but I mean, it's a glorious place for kids to go.
It's a lovely country park, and I think a very unique venue for our part of the world. Bizarrely, as I say, prior to the 1970s, we were known at Nebworth House as the home of Edward Bulwer Lytton. Post 1970, we're now better known worldwide as Britain's premier rock venue. And also, you know, sort of for our adventure playground and you know, the generations of kids that have grown up in the park.
Let's pick up on the rock festival, which you can't have started it because you're too young, because it's 40 years ago.
That's kind of you to say. I was actually 12. It's our 40th anniversary this year. So we started in 1974. Yes, it was started by my parents. We are the largest venue in the country. We are the largest single stage venue in the country. We have a license for 125,000 people. Although places like Glastonbury have a license for 160,000 people, that's spread across different stages. In fact, their main stage only has a license for 80. So we proudly pronounce ourselves the largest venue in the country. And as a result, when you get an artist who wants to make a statement, be they an Oasis or a Robbie Williams, they will want to come and play Nebworth Park. And we've been doing that now for 40 years. And
a lot of highlights, presumably.
A lot of wonderful stories, which add to the great sort of treasure house of stories that Nebworth House is. We hosted the very last Freddie Mercury concert, for instance, in 86. We hosted the very last concert in the UK by the original Led Zeppelin. So there are a lot of key moments.
What time of the year does it take place?
It takes place in the summer, usually just one or two weekends every summer. And it makes a huge difference to the locality. I mean,
the planning for each year, presumably, is not just done within that year.
It's done at least a year in advance and sometimes a year and a half in advance. But it is a wonderful thing in that, you know, all the local hotels are full on a weekend, which is never the case any other time of the year. And, you know, it's wonderful for all the local businesses.
You've had the Rolling Stones were there, I believe. There are various stories about their visit.
The Rolling Stones came in 1976, and that was a time when, you know, they were less inclined to sort of helicopter in, and so they stayed the weekend, which was entertaining. Indeed, it was entertaining.
You were there at the time, eh?
That was a spotty 14-year-old. I was probably watching telly for most of it. but no, it was a colourful weekend, and yes, indeed, there's one or two tales to tell.
Another tale that I heard that has absolutely nothing to do with the rock festival is that the church, which you say is owned by the Church of England, but one assumes at a certain point throughout much of the family history that would be the founder that appointed the vicar and had the control over who was there. And there's some story I heard one of your antecedents not wishing to see the church, and that's why there are trees. Tell me the story.
The novelist's mother was a wonderful Regency widow, the sort of character you read about in Jane Austen all the time, and a very fiery, forceful character, quite antisocial, but very, very sure of her own opinions. She very much objected to the tithe tax that, she called it a tax, that one was expected to give the Church of England a tenth of the estate's produce every year, which she thought was grossly unfair. And it meant that she argued bitterly with all three of the vicars who were there during her time and held alternative services in Nebworth House. And since most of the parishioners worked on the estate, if it was her wish that they come to her services rather than the vicar's services, that's indeed what happened. So the poor old vicars were preaching preaching to empty churches. And so deep did this feud run that she was determined not even to enter the church feet first. She built herself a mausoleum just alongside the church for when she finally passed away. And you're absolutely right. She planted a row of trees so she didn't have to look at it. A dreadful business, but probably exaggerated now to improve the story. I'm sure the vicars managed to calm her down.
Is it the parish church of the village now, that church?
There is also a parish church in what we call New Nebworth, which is an interesting church in itself because it's based on a design by Edwin Lutyens, the architect, who actually married into the Lytton family. And so his influence is to be seen quite a lot around the village of Nebworth.
Are there deer wandering through the park?
Yes. In Hertfordshire, we have a wonderful collection of harts. Yes, but it's been a deer park again since forever.
Was it ever a hunting park?
Very, very possibly, dating way back. I mean, those are ancient woodlands that we look after. We were very pleased to sort of reintroduce the deer when my father made the big leap into running the park commercially in the 70s. And we love having the deer. They're a wonderful feature of the park.
Yes, it's a great thing to see if you're walking across the park. So all these activities, the adventure playground, there was a railway, a small railway at one stage, wasn't there?
Most of the sort of the things that the country pursuits that one imagines in a country park, we have tried at some point during the last 45 years. And the perennial favourites like the adventure playground are still going strong. And it's great fun to have parents bring their children, remembering the time that they as children played in exactly the same adventure playground, indeed on exactly the same Astroglide slide.
Because the structure of the state is complex. All of that has to go towards keeping this estate going and open.
Absolutely.
That must be quite difficult.
It is extremely difficult. And in fact, it was in fairly bad shape when my wife and I took it over about 14 years ago. And she in particular has worked very hard to get the books balancing again. And as I mentioned earlier, we have managed that with the estate and just about with the park. I mean, we're very much a victim of bad weather. I mean, it's no good to us if it's sunny on a Monday. It needs to be sunny on a Sunday. But we are at the mercy of the weather. And that is why it's very important for us, if we can, to try and have these large music events, because if we have one of those, they're not dependent on the weather, and that will rescue us in a bad season.
Do you do other music events than the famous rock festival?
No, we do events most summer weekends, but to put on a music event in Nebworth Park is quite a big operation, and you need it has a certain level where it only works at a certain level. So
when you say put on events, what sort of events do you?
So most weekends there'll be a car show or a craft fair or a music collector's fair, or yes, we have lovely summer events most summer weekends. But you know, the concerts are a sort of a special weekend. They don't happen every year. I mean, we try and have one every year. We love them, and we're thrilled that Nebworth's name now carries worldwide because of them.
It's the UK equivalent of Woodstock, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, I mean, it is, absolutely. I mean, Glastonbury, it would be the only other possible contender, but Nebworth is the biggest.
Yeah, but you go to Glastonbury for a week of mud.
Yes. Yes, a wonderful thing about our venue is that it is actually a bowl-shaped field. So it's a natural amphitheatre, and it drains very well, yeah. So it's a very good venue. And of course, we're direct access off the A1M and 30 miles north of London.
Access is best by car, I think, is that right?
Nebworth is so easy to get to by car, yes. We're at junction 7 of the A1, at Stevenage South, just north of the M25. So we're very easy to get to by car. A little bit harder by train, but there are always taxis at Stevenage Station, and Stevenage Station is a short drive away.
And a constant rolling pattern of exhibitions within the house. And recent exhibitions on the British Raj, which is quite interesting when you go back, because the author that we started talking about, of course, was one of his political roles as Secretary of State for the Colonies. Is that connected?
Only indirectly is that connected. I mean, that's a very interesting 6 months he spent as Secretary of the Colonies. But actually, the reason we've got an Indian exhibition is because of his son. His son, who actually would much rather have been a poet and an author like his father, was sort of pushed into a safer trade and went into the Foreign Service and actually ended up with the top job, which was Viceroy of India. Those were the days when if one was given a gift by a local Maharaja, one didn't have to surrender it to the British government. One actually got to keep it. So we've got some great fun, you know, photographs of Maharajas from the 1870s and extraordinary sort of fun objects.
And the great heyday of the
From the great heyday of the Raj. And on the centenary of a great party that he threw in Delhi in 1877, father turned what was an old sort of squash court attached to Nebworth House into a temporary exhibition, bits and pieces of memorabilia from our two generations, because actually the Viceroy's son also went back to India and was governor of Bengal in the 1920s. So we have two generations worth of memorabilia from India, and yes, an extraordinary collection of pieces from a very interesting time.
Thank you very much, Henry, for coming in. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Rob. I've enjoyed it.